The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I'm Benjamin Wittes, and this is the Lawfare Podcast Special Edition, May 9th, 2018. Gina Haspel, President Trump's nominee to head the CIA, faced the Senate Intelligence Committee today. She took questions for 2.5 hours, and we have cut it down to 1.25 hours. We're just giving you all the questions and all the answers. None of the posturing, none of the silliness. Just the substance. It's the Lawfare Podcast Special Edition, Gina Haspel versus the committee with no bull.
There's been much debate and much news coverage about Jose Rodriguez, the former director of the National Clandestine Service, and his decision to direct the destruction of the detainee interrogation videotapes. Can you describe for members your role in those events?
Senator, yes, I can. In 2005, I believe it was fall of 2005, I was chief of staff to the deputy director for operations, that is head of the clandestine service. The tape issue had lingered at CIA for a period of about 3 years. I believe the tapes were made in 2002. And over time, there was a great deal of concern about the security risk posed to CIA officers who were depicted on the tapes. Those security issues centered on the threat from Al-Qaeda should those tapes be irresponsibly leaked. Mr. Rodriguez, who was the DDO at the time, the deputy director for operations, has been very upfront and has made it clear on a number of occasions publicly that he and he alone made the decision to destroy the tapes. I would also make it clear that I did not appear on the tapes, as has been mischaracterized in the press. However, as chief of staff, and I believe like everyone at the agency at that time, we were extremely concerned about the security risk that was posed to our officers. We were aiming to do two things, to adhere to U.S. law, but at the same time reach a resolution that would protect our officers. There were numerous legal consultations over a period of years at the agency. Our lawyers were very consistent in saying to us that there was no legal requirement to retain the tapes, no legal impediment to disposing of the tapes. I'm not a lawyer, but I believe the basis for that judgment was the fact that there was a complete and written detailed record of the interrogations. And at CIA, the official record is the cable record. We use that for all of our operations. There were two reviews done of the tapes to compare them to the written record. One of those was undertaken by the Office of General Counsel. The second was undertaken by the Office of the Inspector General. In both cases, they found that the written record was detailed, accurate, and complete. So the consistent legal advice, it never changed, was that there was no legal requirement to retain the tapes. But there were some policy objections to disposing of the tapes. So our job in the Office of the Deputy Director for Operations was to arrange consultations with senior leaders at the agency. At the time the tapes were destroyed, Mr. Rodriguez asked me to prepare a cable because he was going to have another conversation with then director of the agency to talk about this issue again. I did so. A couple of days later, he released the order he believed on his own authority. He took the decision himself and he said it was based on his own authority. I asked him if he had had the consultation with the director at the time as planned. And he said he decided to take the decision on his own authority. There were three investigations, three looks at the tapes, inquiries that I know about. One was undertaken by HPSC, the House Oversight Committee. I never saw a report on that, but the chairman at the time said that he found no fault with my actions. There was a Department of Justice investigation that was closed without charges after, I think, more than 2 years. And then there was an internal investigation of the issue conducted by one of my predecessors, Mr. Morrell, who found no fault with my actions and that my decisions were consistent with my obligations as an agency officer.
Thank you for that answer. Recognizing my 5 minutes is now up, I recognize the Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to follow up on the question around the tapes, Ms. Haspel. November 4th of 2005, then Senator Levin introduced legislation to create a commission model on the 9/11 commission to look into the agency's treatment of detainees. 3 days later, you drafted the cable. 4 days later, the tapes were destroyed. Were you aware of Senator Levin's actions? And the timing seems very close to acting on behalf of potential congressional action. And in Mr. Morrell's statements, there was comments that your superior, Mr. Rodriguez, was aware that two White House counsels, the Council of the Vice President, the DNI and the DCIA, and the HPSC ranking member had all expressed opposition or reservations about the destruction of the tapes. So were you aware of those facts that Mr. Rodriguez was at least aware of, and were you aware of the actions of Senator Levin when you drafted your memo and then had the tapes subsequently destroyed?
Senator Warner, what I recall were the security issues surrounding the tapes. I don't recall pending legislation. I just don't recall
what
that.
About the issue of all of the councils, the Council of the Vice President, DNI, HPSC ranking member, the fact there was?
Senator, I don't know if I was aware of all of those, but I knew there was disagreement about the issue of the tapes outside the agency, and that is why we were working toward a meeting with the then director to talk about those issues and how we address those concerns of people outside the agency. So I was working toward resolution within a process.
Well, with that overhang, I know other members will raise this. The timing seems, I hope I can get some more clarity on the timing. I want to make sure I take my time, though. And I heard your statement about the fact that if you're confirmed, there will never be an interrogation program under your leadership, and you addressed the issue of the fact that it is against the law. Question I have, with the benefit of hindsight, do you believe the program, in terms of the interrogation program, was consistent with American values?
Senator, as we sit here today, and with some distance between us and the events of 9/11, the Congress and indeed our nation have had an opportunity to have a debate about the interrogation standards we want to use as the United States of America. We have decided to hold ourselves to a stricter moral standard for DOD that is defined in the Army Field Manual. I support the United States holding itself to that stricter moral standard, and I support the Army Field Manual.
But Ms. Haspel, that is answering on a legalistic. We're asking you to take on a position. I understand with RDI you were downstream, not part of the policymaking. But if you're entrusted with this responsibility, I need to get at least to get a sense of what your moral code says about those kind of actions, because there is the potential that this president could ask you to do something. He obviously believes in these procedures, but even if he asks you to do something that is not directly related to detention and interrogation, but if he asks you to do something that you believe is morally questionable, even if there is an OLC opinion that in effect gives you a get-out-of-jail-free card, what will you do in that action when you are the director of the CIA?
Senator, my father's watching today. He served 33 years in the Air Force. My parents gave me a very strong moral compass. I support the higher moral standard that this country has decided to hold itself to. I would never, ever take CIA back to an interrogation program. First of all, CIA follows the law. We followed the law then. We follow the law today. I support the law. I wouldn't support a change in the law, but I'll tell you this. I would not put CIA officers at risk by asking them to undertake risky, controversial activity again.
Ms. Haspel, my question is this. On a going forward basis, if this president asks you to do something that you find morally objectionable, even if there is an OLC opinion, what will you do? Will you carry that out, that option, that order, or not? I mean, we're entrusting you in a very different position if you're confirmed. I just need to know what your
Senator,
response to that would be.
Senator, my moral compass is strong. I would not allow CIA to undertake activity that I thought was immoral, even if it was technically legal. I would absolutely not permit it.
So you would not follow the order if you felt it was...
No. I believe that CIA must undertake activities that are consistent with American values. America is looked at all over the world as an example to everyone else in the world, and we have to uphold that. And CIA is included in that.
You know, over the 10 years, I came here just as the investigation on the interrogation thing was starting, and I participated, other members of the committee here participated in that. And there was a real tension between not just the CIA, but the other intelligence agencies because of the way the oversight was being done by this committee. My impression is, and it's a clear impression, that the relationship between the agency, CIA, and the other intelligence agencies has evolved to a very different place than where it was when I first got here. Could you talk about that a little bit, please?
Thank you for that question, Senator. I think it's a very important question. When Mike Pompeo and I took the reins at Langley about 15 months ago, we decided to concentrate on four initiatives. And one of those is partnerships. And it involves two areas. First, our partnerships with our other IC partners in the U.S. government, but even more broadly than that. There are many important partnerships for CIA, and as you say, those partnerships are critical because it's a complex world. There is no more important partnership than the one between CIA and DOD. I have had the absolute honor and privilege to sit at the table with Secretary Mattis and General Dunford these last 15 months, to work with the JSOC commander and the other combatant commanders. I don't think that very important relationship has ever been in a better place. Likewise, NSA is our sister agency. We're very close. And of course, our relationship with the Federal Bureau of Investigation is critical to the national security of this country. But you mentioned something else that's important, and it's a bit of an unheralded story, but the intelligence services of our closest allies do amazing things for the national security of this country each and every day. And I can't talk very much about it in this open session, but they do incredible things that advance our national security on the terrorism and proliferation fronts in particular. And we owe a great deal of gratitude to those allies.
While many nominees have classified backgrounds, you are very unique. You have 30 years of undercover experience. Accordingly, we ask the agency that your records be declassified. I think I signed three letters in that regard, to make an informed decision, and because the public should be aware of the background of its leaders. Instead, the CIA selectively declassified only small pieces of information to bolster your nomination, while keeping damaging information under wraps. Given the CIA's refusal to make your record public, I'm very limited in what I can say. And I think, as you know, I like you personally very much. This is probably the most difficult hearing in my more than two decades I have ever sat in. But let me begin. In his memoir, former CIA Consul General John Rizzo described how, in 2005, Jose Rodriguez was promoted to be Deputy CIA Director for Operations and installed as his chief of staff an officer from the Counterterrorist Center who had previously run the interrogation program. Is that you?
Senator, I'm so pleased you asked me that question.
Yes or no will do.
No. And for the record, if you have your staff check, Mr. Rizzo has issued a correction. It is true that it is hard for
Excuse
in a
me,
secret
my understanding
that is not
he has
accurate.
Recently confirmed that it was you.
No, he issued a correction. When people write books, I didn't read Mr. Rizzo's book, so I didn't even know that was out there. Mr. Rizzo, and actually I read about it in the Washington Post last night. Eric Wemple, I believe, wrote a story talking about the failure of certain organizations to correct their facts, and that was one of them. And he noted that Mr. Rizzo, about 10 days ago, he was wrong, he didn't fact check, and that has been corrected. I would never even served okay. in that department, right. nor was I the
Let
head of it.
Let me read directly his quote from the book. Several weeks later, Porter promoted Jose Rodriguez to the position of Deputy Director for Operations, Jim Pavitt's former job. Once more, Jose installed as his chief of staff an officer from the Counterterrorist Center who had previously run the interrogation program. Between them, they were the staunchest advocates inside the building for destroying the tapes.
Senator, I did not run the interrogation department. In fact, I was not even read into the interrogation program until it had been up and running for a year. I never served.
Were you an advocate for destroying the tapes?
Senator, I absolutely was an advocate if we could within and conforming to U.S. law and if we could get policy concurrence to eliminate the security risk posed to our officers by those tapes and the consistent
and
legal
advice. You were aware of what those tapes contained.
No, I never watched the tapes,
no,
but I understood
but you,
that our officers' faces were on them and that that was very dangerous at a time when there were unauthorized disclosures that were exposing the program.
But it also exposed how the program was conducted because they were tapes of the actual interrogation of certain of 92 detainees, as I understand it.
No, the tapes were recordings of only one detainee. It was 92 tapes of one
okay.
detainee.
All right. Well, thank you for that. Let me, in November and December of 2002, did you oversee the enhanced interrogation of al-Nashiri, which included the use of the water board as publicly reported? Yes or no?
Senator, anything about my classified assignment history throughout my 33 years, we can talk about in this afternoon's classified session. There are guidelines on, as you know, existing classification guidelines, and I should go back to your first point, which is very, very important, about why we haven't declassified more about my history. There are existing classification guidelines that apply to operational activity of any officer. It has been suggested to me by my team that if we tried to declassify some of my operational history, it would help my nomination. I said that we could not do that. It is very important that the director of the Central Intelligence Agency adhere to the same classification guidelines that all employees must adhere to, because there are very good reason for those classification guidelines. Exposing operational information can be damaging to sources and methods, as you know, but there is also a physical risk to officers who go out to the far ends of the globe and conduct dangerous missions, and they believe that their participation in those dangerous missions will be protected. It would be a security risk if we started declassifying associations between CIA officers and particular terrorist or terrorist operations. So I am adhering to the existing guidelines, and I believe that it is important and that I could not stand before the CIA if I sought for short-term gain to declassify my operational history.
On a policy front, I want to ask you about U.S.-China relations. For decades, American foreign policy towards China has been rooted in the belief that as they prospered economically, they would embrace democracy, they would embrace the global rule of law. That consensus, I think, by all accounts, has been catastrophically wrong. Today, China is undertaking a comprehensive effort to supplant the United States and to undermine us. And they've benefited from the greatest transfer of wealth in history through the theft and the forced transfer of intellectual property. They use unfair trade and other practices to undermine our industrial and technical base. They gather and exploit data at an unrivaled scale. They're building the most capable and well-funded military in the world, second to ours. And so my question, first and foremost, is the agency, as it stands today, equipped and structured to meet this multifaceted challenge?
Senator, thank you for that question. One of the first things Mike Pompeo and I looked at when I returned to the agency from overseas in early 2017 is how we're doing on the hard targets. That's what you're talking about: China, Iran, Russia, North Korea. Of course, our investment in counterterrorism has to be very significant. We have to be vigilant, and we can't take our eyes off that ball. But there are more strategic threats, and you talked about one of them, China. China's rise as a global power. CIA has a very important role in monitoring China's rise as a global power. China's efforts to diminish U.S. influence, not only in the Pacific, but all around the world, China's unfair trade practices, and China's overt and illicit efforts to steal U.S. technology and know-how and intellectual property. We, with the support of this committee, are raising our investment on each of these hard targets. We have incredible expertise on China at the agency. It is a very strong team. I'm very proud of our analysts. It is a subject that a week doesn't go by that either the president asks for an expert briefing or Secretary Mattis asks for someone to come over and brief him on China issues. We have a good program, but your more general point is that we have to do more and we have to invest more on each of these hard targets.
Well, I recently introduced legislation with Senator Cotton that would block the U.S. government from buying or leasing telecommunication equipment from Huawei or ZTE Corporation beyond government purchase. I would ask you, just as with the citizens that are watching, if you were just an everyday American or even someone involved in any sort of sensitive work, would you purchase a Huawei phone or connect your phone or computer to a Huawei or ZTE network?
Well, Senator, as I mentioned, I don't even have a social media account, but I wouldn't use Huawei products.
And
Senator's time has expired.
Thank you.
Senator Wyden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Haspel, thank you very much for your courtesy in meeting with me yesterday. However, I regret to have to say there is no greater indictment of this nomination process than the fact that you are deciding what the country gets to know about you and what it doesn't. And so far, the American people have only been given information that is designed to help you get confirmed. Everything else has been classified. So I've got some questions. I think they're fairly short, and some I hope we can do yes or no. Now, you publicly released the Morrell Report, which some have cited as reflecting favorably about your involvement in the destruction of interrogation tapes. Do you have any objection this morning to the public release of the Durham investigation, which would give the American people more information on the same topic and which does not come from the CIA?
Senator, just to be clear, the request for the declassification of the Morrell memo was in response to a member on this committee. I have not read the Durham report, and I don't know the classification, so let me take that for the record, if I may.
But do you have any objection?
Well, I haven't seen it, so I haven't read it, so I don't know.
Well, I'm going to ask you about this in the classified session, but I think in the name of fairness with respect to your role on these issues, this ought to be made public just the way the Morrell report was. Now, on Sunday, the Washington Post reported that unnamed officials were pushing back against accusations that you supported torture in one of our biggest papers in the country. Between 2005 and 2007, the program was winding down. The CIA was capturing fewer detainees, and waterboarding was no longer approved. During that time, did you ever call for the program to be continued or expanded?
Senator, I think, like all of us who were in the Counterterrorism Center and working at CIA in those years after 9/11, we all believed in our work. We were committed. We had been charged with making sure the country wasn't attacked again. And we had been informed that the techniques in CIA's program were legal and authorized by the highest legal authority in our country and also the president. So I believe I and my colleagues in the Counterterrorism Center were working as hard as we could with the tools that we were given to make sure that we were successful in our mission.
My time is short, and that respectfully is not responsive to the question. That was a period where the agency was capturing fewer detainees, waterboarding was no longer approved, and especially in light of that Washington Post story, I would really like to have on the record whether you ever called for the program to be continued, which it sure sounds to me like your answer suggested. You said, well, we were doing our job. It ought to be continued. That troubles me very much because you were the chief of staff to the deputy director for operations. It's a senior position. So I'm quite troubled by that.
Senator, may I just say that I don't know which Washington Post story you're referring to, but let me say this about myself. After 9/11, I didn't look to go sit on the Swiss desk. I stepped up. I was not on the sidelines. I was on the front lines in the Cold War, and I was on the front lines in the fight against Al-Qaeda. I'm very proud of the fact that we captured the perpetrator of 9/11, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. I think we did extraordinary work. To me, the tragedy is that the controversy surrounding the interrogation program, which as I've already indicated to Senator Warner, I fully understand that, but it has cast a shadow over what has been a major contribution to protecting this country.
I respect a number of those points. I just am trying to get some answers here to questions that I think are particularly relevant. According to a press story today about the destruction of the interrogation videotapes, Jose Rodriguez told you in advance that he was going to take matters into his own hands. Did that conversation happen?
Senator, no, it did not. Mr. Rodriguez indicated to me that he planned to discuss it with the then Director Goss.
Let me see if I can get one last in on it. When did you become aware that the cable authorizing the destruction of the interrogation videotapes had been sent?
Senator, as chief of staff, it's a desk-bound job, so I was at my desk at least 12 hours every day, and I could see my computer screen. So it was shortly after Mr. Rodriguez, who sat right across the hall from me, had released the cable.
I'm over my time. I'll ask some more about this in the classified session. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Jack Reed and I co-sponsored the McCain-Feinstein bill that banned waterboarding and other enhanced interrogation techniques because we viewed them
as contrary to American values and tantamount to torture. So let me ask you a series of questions. First, were you involved in any way in the creation of the enhanced interrogation program?
Senator, I was not, and I was not read into the program until about a year into its existence.
Were you a senior manager at the CIA at the time that the program was created?
No. I had just returned from an overseas posting. I was a GS-15. I was not yet a member of the senior executive service. I was assigned as a deputy group chief. That's pretty far down the totem pole in a program that had nothing to do with the detention and interrogation program.
You said that the program had already been in effect for some time before you were read into it. What was your reaction when you learned of the program?
Senator, it was a new subject for me. We, as I said, we lacked interrogation expertise at the agency. We didn't have interrogators. I was told that interrogation experts had designed the program, that the highest legal authority in the United States had approved it, and that the President of the United States had approved it, as well as a trusted leadership at the Central Intelligence Agency.
Have your views of the program evolved in the years following the attacks on our country on 9/11?
Senator, they have. I think it's very important. I think for any leader, as you go through a career, you have to learn the leadership lessons. I'm not going to sit here with the benefit of hindsight and judge the very good people who made hard decisions, who were running the agency in very extraordinary circumstances at the time. But as I mentioned to Senator Warner, this country has had the opportunity to reflect because we have some space. We're not fearing another attack. And we have deliberated about the standard we want to use in interrogations, and that is the Army Field Manual. The very important thing to know about CIA is we follow the law. We followed the law then, and we follow the law now. But I would never permit CIA to resume an interrogation program.
So that's a very good segue into a very important question. As a candidate, President Trump repeatedly expressed his support for waterboarding. In fact, he said we should go beyond waterboarding. So if the CIA has a high-value terrorism suspect in its custody, and the president gave you a direct order to waterboard that suspect, what would you do?
Senator, I would advise, I do not believe the president would ask me to do that, but we have today in the U.S. government other U.S. government entities that conduct interrogations. DOD uses the Army Field Manual, and they conduct battlefield interrogations, and CIA has incredible expertise it can bring to the table in support of those interrogations. The FBI has its authorities to conduct interrogations, and as you know, we have the high-value interrogation group. So, you know, I would be advise anyone who asks me about it that CIA is not the right place to conduct interrogations. We don't have interrogators, and we don't have interrogation expertise. So I believe that would be the reason I have been nominated is that people have some respect for my views on these issues. My experiences during those days after 9/11 inform my views. I'm extremely knowledgeable, and I'm also extremely knowledgeable about the price CIA working level men and women out in the trenches paid for decisions made after 9/11.
So debriefing a source is very different from interrogating a detainee. Should the CIA even be in the business of interrogating detainees?
We're not in the business of interrogating.
Because of the Hague is what you're saying.
Well, we're not in the business of interrogating detainees. As you said, there's a big difference between interrogation and simple question and answer. Having access, direct access to a terrorist is extremely valuable for intelligence collection, and we do that. But CIA does not today conduct interrogations. We never did historically, and we're not getting back in that business.
Thank you.
Senator's time's expired. Senator Heinrich.
Ms. Haspel, you didn't actually answer the question, what would you do if the president ordered you to get back in that business?
Senator, the president selected me to give him advice. No. I would not restart under any circumstances in an interrogation program at CIA, under any circumstances.
Thank you. You have repeatedly said that at the time, the CIA's use of interrogation techniques like waterboarding were determined to be legal. Now, there was an opinion written by the Office of Legal Counsel. I don't believe those actions were ever legal. They certainly didn't meet the bar set by either the Geneva Conventions or our own Army Field Manual. And I'm not aware of a single court ruling that affirmed that opinion. Today, I'm not really interested in whether you believe those techniques were legal, but I am interested in the question that Senator Warner asked you. We got a very legalistic answer to that question. Let me ask you again, were these the right thing to do? Are they consistent with American values, fundamentally? What do you believe?
Senator, I believe very strongly in American values and America being an example to the rest of the world. That is why I support the fact that we have chosen to hold ourselves to a stricter moral standard.
But that's about Congress and all of us. I want to know what you think.
I think that we should hold ourselves to a stricter moral standard, and I would never allow CIA to be involved in coercive interrogations.
Where was that moral compass at the time?
Senator, that was 17 years ago, and it's, you know, CIA, like the U.S. Army and the U.S. Marine Corps, is an organization. It's a large bureaucracy, and when you're out in the trenches at far-flung outposts in the globe, and Washington says, here's what we need you to do, this is legal, the Attorney General has deemed it so, the President of the United States is counting on you to prevent another attack.
It's legal.
I'm sorry?
I know you believed it was legal. I want to see, I want to feel, I want to trust that you have the moral compass that you said you have. You're giving very legalistic answers to very fundamentally moral questions.
Senator, we've provided the committee every evaluation since my training report when I first joined in 1985. In all of my assignments, I have conducted myself honorably and in accordance with U.S. law. My parents raised me right. I know the difference between right and wrong.
Let's move on to the videotapes. You told me earlier this week that you supported the decision of the CIA's Deputy Director of Operations to order the destruction of those videotapes depicting the use of EITs. Would you still support that order today?
Senator, I would not. I think it's, as I said, it's very important that people learn. Experience is a good teacher. And the piece that was missing from the tapes was making sure that we had all the stakeholders' concurrence. There's also another very important leadership lesson. And as director of CIA, when your officers are concerned about their physical security, you can't let it languish in your inbox
for three years
with no action.
We should support that security. Why couldn't the agency have simply digitized that video and then blacked out the faces of any agents in those videos? Why actually destroy the videotapes? Doesn't that feel like a cover-up, even if it isn't?
Senator, I don't think we were worried about official release. This was at a time when the entire program was the subject of unauthorized leaks, and someone was found guilty of those unauthorized leaks. So the concern was an irresponsible leak of our officers' faces to the world, not an official release.
No, I understand that. But if you would have blacked out the agents' faces, destroyed the videotapes, and then kept a digital record, that would have addressed those security concerns.
Senator, I'm just not a technical person, so I don't.
It's not that complicated.
Well, I don't, Senator, I don't know if that was considered or not.
Do you think that a transcript that says the detainee continued to scream or the detainee appeared to be drowning has the same gravity, the same reality as an actual video?
Senator, I never saw the videos. I do know that we keep very complete and almost verbatim records in our cable traffic. But I think that the issue was the security risk posed to our officers.
This is a term I think is often overused, and I try not to use it very often, but it is the truth to power. You're in the room. You understand the facts. Talk about your sense of obligation to present those facts and to speak truth to power at a moment when it matters.
Senator, thank you. Truth to power is one of CIA's most important missions. Like with any new administration, CIA has to demonstrate to the new team what we can bring to the table. I'm incredibly proud, even though I come from the operational side, I'm incredibly proud of the analyst at CIA. That's really our face with policymakers, including the Congress. They do an incredible job on the president's daily brief each day. They do an incredible job on the expert briefings they provide to inform the important decisions our policymakers must consider. As I mentioned, there isn't a week that doesn't go by that I am not the subject of a request to have an analyst by name come over and talk about some of the big issues. Our North Korea team has a superb reputation. Our China team is running all over this town. They're so busy providing briefings. We are all about bringing the most sophisticated, objective, all-source analysis we can to make sure that the president and his team have the best intelligence that we can deliver.
I appreciate that. I appreciate your respect for the team. Let's be sure we've talked specifically about you. You're in the room. There is a fact that either hasn't appropriately been looked at or considered or appreciated in your view. What do you do at that moment?
Senator, thank you. I've already worked with this president and his team for 15 months. I think I have a great reputation with them. I'm at the table with Secretary Mattis and General Dunford and Secretary Mnuchin. I'm at many of the principals' meetings. I back up the former director in the Oval Office. I'm part of Director Coates' team. Sometimes Sue Gordon is with me. I think we're bringing a very high-quality product. As a senior intelligence officer, someone who spent a lot of time overseas in some of these places, the president does turn to me for my view on certain countries and certain experiences. I give him my best advice, but I always separate my view as someone who's been out in the field from the view of our analysts, because we're really there to deliver the objective all-source analysis that they write to support the president.
So you would see yourself as the master of the facts. The facts to be sure the president knows all the facts the president needs to know.
I think that's incredibly important, Senator.
A quick yes or no question, not having to do with what we've been talking about. In January of 2017, the IC issued a joint report on the Russia involvement in the 2016 elections. Do you agree with the findings of that report?
Senator, I do.
Thank you. We've talked a bit about the statement in Mr. Rizzo's book that you had previously run the interrogation program. I understand he has changed his view on that. Your career timeline, 2001-03, Deputy Group Chief, Counterterrorism Center, 03-04, Senior Level Supervisor, Counterterrorism Center, 04-05, Deputy Chief, National Resources Division. In any of those jobs, were you in a supervisory or management capacity in connection with the rendition and interrogation program?
Senator, we'll be able to go over, and I know you have some of this information, but we'll be able to go over any of my classified assignments in this afternoon session, and I can talk about that. Just to be clear, Mr. Rizzo didn't change his view. He was wrong, and he issued a correction.
Who's deciding what's classified and what isn't in terms of what's released to this committee?
Senator, we are following the existing guidelines. There are very...
Who's deciding?
We are following the existing
guidelines. Who is we?
Well, I have chosen to follow the guidelines that exist
You are making the classification decisions about what material should be released to this committee?
I am electing not to make an exception for myself, but I am adhering to existing RDI guidelines. If I may just...
That's fine. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to understand that. With regard to the table, cable, Mr. Rodriguez said that he asked you to ask two questions of the lawyers the day before the drafting of the cable. One was, was it legal to destroy the tape? Second, did he have the authority? Did you mention to those lawyers the intention to issue a cable that would destroy the tapes when you asked those two questions, or were those the only questions you asked?
No, Senator. I explained that Mr. Rodriguez wanted to get resolution on this issue and that he was planning to have a conversation with the director about it, and he needed to have revalidation of those two points.
And when you drafted the cable, is that correct?
Yes, at his request.
Isn't it common practice in the CIA when a cable, particularly of this importance, is drafted, that it be copied to various parts of the legal establishment within the CIA? And was that done in this case? Was that cable copied to Mr. Rizzo or other lawyers within the agency?
Senator, there was robust coordination with the lawyers at CIA
on this
issue.
Were they copied on the cable?
Mr. Rodriguez chose not to copy the lawyers on the cable because he took the decision on his own authority and he wanted to take responsibility for it. He has been very clear and upfront about that.
And you were aware, because you drafted the cable, that the lawyers weren't copied on the cable?
But I knew that the lawyers had been consulted in a meeting and consulted over many times over 3 years.
In May of 2005, Mr. Rizzo reports, I told Jose and his chief of staff, that was you, is that correct? I can't recall if I talked to them separately or together. They were crestfallen because they were now on notice that the DNI, two successive White House counsels, and the vice president's top lawyer had weighed in strongly against destroying the tapes. Do you recall that conversation?
Senator, I don't recall that specific conversation. However, I was aware that there were some objections, and that is why Jose was
going
to go back to
the director.
Those
aren't some objections. Those are very straightforward prohibitions by your superiors to not destroy the tapes, were they not?
Senator, I don't recall that specific conversation.
But you do know, and Mr. Morrell, in the report which has been released, says something similar. He said, the record is clear that Mr. Rodriguez, and I presume you, was aware that two White House counsels, the counsel of the vice president, the DNI, the DCIA, and the HPSI ranking member had either expressed opposition or reservation about the destruction of tapes. Did you know that at the time you drafted that cable?
Senator, I don't believe I knew that entire list, but I knew there were some objections, and that is why we were going back to the director of the Central Intelligence Agency.
Final question, was it a matter of coincidence that this decision was made to destroy the tapes in the same week that two major stories appeared in American newspapers, the Levin Amendment was being considered and the McCain Amendment was on the floor of the U.S. Senate? Was it a mere coincidence that that was after 3 years of delay the decision was taken to destroy the tapes?
Senator, I don't believe in the Directorate of Operations front office. We were aware of legislation. The lawyers may have been aware. I do not believe we were aware.
There's a broader question, not legislation. I'm talking about stories in the newspapers. There's a great deal of public interest just that week in the whole interrogation question. Were you aware of that when you made this decision?
Senator, I do not recall being aware of that.
Senator's time expired. Chair would note at this time, since there's been a reference to declassification, I just want to draw a distinction, that the Durham investigation done by the Department of Justice is not in the purview of the Central Intelligence Agency. Any decision to declassify or keep classified is a Department of Justice decision, and I just wanted to separate that from the discussions about Ms. Haspel's background at the agency.
Let me ask you a little bit about some ongoing threats that are coming at us we haven't had much time to talk about today. Let's talk about the very serious counter-narcotics threat that's coming at us in some of the changing situations that's happening in our hemisphere, dealing with drug trafficking organizations and international drug trafficking in particular. What do you sense is a role the CIA should have in the ongoing work to be able to do counter-narcotics work in our hemisphere?
Senator, thank you very much for that question. And you've been a big supporter of CIA's counter-narcotics work. But when I returned from my overseas posting in early 2017, I was frankly shocked at what I saw was happening in our country, particularly in places like my home state of Kentucky, where there's a real crisis. But I think the number is 63,000 Americans we lost last year. We're losing 115 Americans a day. That seems to me to be an extraordinary crisis for our country. I would like to talk about this, if we could, some this afternoon. But as you know, CIA does have a fairly modest program to try and stop the flow of drugs from coming across our southern border, heroin, cocaine, and fentanyl. We work very closely in Central America and Latin America to try and stop that flow. I've been talking to our team at CIA headquarters about this for several months. I've asked them to come up with some options to grow that program. We have extraordinary support for that program on this committee. But I think in light of the fact that we're losing 115 Americans a day, that we're losing almost a generation in some places, that we have to do more. CIA is not the primary agency, but we can do a lot. But it has to be a whole of government effort.
All right, so flip on that into the cyber activities and some of the cyber threats we have. Some of those cyber threats are changing internationally. There were criminal gangs in other countries that were trying to steal credit cards, steal information, and to be able to sell that out there. Now there are some governments that are using the criminal gangs in their own country, and they become this strange hybrid that's out there between a criminal gang sometimes and a government entity at other times. And we're very dependent on trying to be able to identify where these threats are coming from and who those threats are coming from. What is needed with CIA, and what do you anticipate would be the need to be able to help our nation be able to determine who the threats are and where they're coming from?
Senator, you're quite right that it's a growing threat, and it's another area where you have to have a whole of government effort. And it's a very murky world, as you point out. China, Russia, Iran, and North Korea have very aggressive offensive cyber programs, both to steal secrets, but also in some cases to earn illicit money. CIA can probably make the biggest contribution in collection about these other countries' activities and various groups' activities so that we can inform the U.S. government agencies that have to mount our defense. And everyone in the U.S. government has been struggling, as all Western governments are, on what is the most effective way to organize yourself for cyber defense. We're still working on that, but CIA has a big role. It's another area that I'd like to amplify on a bit this afternoon if I have the opportunity.
I will look forward to that. I yield back.
Let me ask the first, what was your thoughts and greatest concerns for the United States of America after the 9/11 attack?
I think for probably every American, it was also surreal. But what I was very worried about, and we weren't wrong about this, is that other attacks were being planned. So I think everyone in the U.S. government, probably across the board, but certainly in the intelligence community and FBI, we all felt that we had let the American people down somehow. We didn't know these attacks were coming, and it was very important to identify who was behind these attacks and stop future attack.
After 9/11, had any laws or rules for SAVE procedure changed because of the attacks, of those attacks? And did we change any procedures after that? You're saying you would never do it now. You said you would say no to the president because that's not where we're going. That's not where you want the CIA to be. Were those changed after that?
Senator, I'm not sure I understand exactly, but CIA does not do interrogations. We historically have not done interrogations, and we don't do interrogations today.
Let me go this direction. Are there any other tapes that would reveal agents' identities that have been destroyed, and is that the standard procedure? Or are there any tapes of interrogation that haven't been destroyed, that you, of your knowledge?
Senator, probably I don't know. I don't know if there are any other tapes. I don't believe there are any other
tapes associated with the particular interrogation activity that was on the 92 tapes, but I simply don't know if there are any other videotapes of any other activity.
And then we'll go into this. Explain why you feel so strongly today that CIA should not be an interrogation business. And would it have anything to do with basically the makeup of the CIA with the appointments, appointment to the, your appointment now for that versus the code of conduct for the military? Is there a difference of why you think that the CIA should not be in that business and why it should be done in the military?
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. CIA historically has not done interrogations. We don't have interrogators, so we just don't have any expertise.
Most of the questions have been directed to you has been because of that.
Yes, that's right. And why DOD, of course, does do battlefield interrogations, and that is why we have the Army Field Manual. We have very clear legal and policy guidance for those DOD interrogations, which I support. And then, of course, the FBI has its own authorities for interviewing terrorist suspects. And then, as we mentioned, we have the high-value interrogation group, and CIA is part of that. We support that with substantive expertise about a particular group or an individual, but we don't conduct interrogations.
And I know you stated strongly, that's why you would be, you'd feel very compelled to tell the president, no, this is not something we do, and it's not our line of work.
I just think there are other U.S. government entities that are suited to holding detainees, and that isn't CIA.
If you had been nominated by President Obama, or if Hillary Clinton had won and nominated you to be the CIA director, how many votes do you think you would have gotten to be confirmed as CIA director? You don't have to answer. I also have to take exception to what Senator Warner said when he called an opinion of the Office of Legal Counsel that was signed off by the Attorney General of the United States as a get-out-of-jail-free card. Do you believe, acting under the legal approval of the Attorney General, that you or any other CIA officer should have gone to jail and you needed a get-out-of-jail-free card? You can answer that one, please.
Senator, CIA follows the law.
That's exactly what I thought. Let's turn to the circumstances of what the Counterterrorism Center was doing the days you were there. I think Senator Collins asked an excellent sequence of questions that got at many of these points. I just want to tie a bow on some of them. These programs were, to the best of your understanding, approved by the Commander-in-Chief, legally approved by the Attorney General, and supported by the Director of the CIA, who I point out at the time was the former Democratic Staff Director of this committee. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
You said that you were not a senior manager when those programs were created. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Was John Brennan, a member of the Senior Intelligence Service and the Deputy Executive Director at the time, a senior manager, in your opinion?
Senator, I believe Mr. Brennan was the deputy exter of the agency at that time.
And you'd consider that a senior manager position at the CIA?
I believe it's a number four position.
For John Brennan, who was confirmed to be the CIA director by the following members of this committee: Senator Warner, Senator Feinstein, Senator Heinrich, Senator Collins, Senator King, Senator Burr, Senator Manchin, Senator Wyden, and Senator Rubio. Let's turn to the question about the tapes that were destroyed in 2005. Did any lawyer at any time in any organization of the federal government say that there was a legal prohibition to destroy those tapes?
Senator, they did not. They were very consistent that there was no legal requirement to preserve the tapes because of the written record.
And it's your testimony that there is a written record that fully documents whatever may or may not have happened.
Senator, yes. And there were two reviews done of the written record by the Office of General Counsel and the Office of the Inspector General.
In other words, the CIA has a record no different from the federal court system, which keeps transcripts and allows sketch drawings, but does not allow video recordings in a federal courtroom. Is that correct?
That's correct, Senator.
You were the chief of staff to Mr. Rodriguez when this happened, correct?
Yes.
And at his direction, you drafted a cable that he later sent.
That's correct.
Michael Morrell, who supported Hillary Clinton the last election, cleared you of any wrongdoing in drafting that cable?
He did.
As did an investigation by the Office of Special Counsel and the Office of the Inspector General?
That investigation was closed without charges for Mr. Rodriguez or anyone.
Would holding you responsible for drafting a cable at your boss's direction make any more sense than holding a Senate speechwriter responsible for the boring speeches senators give on the Senate floor?
Senator, I'll defer to you.
I would submit that it does not.
So, one question I've not heard you answer is, do you believe that the previous interrogation techniques were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA officers to whom you referred...
It's a yes or no answer. Do you believe the previous interrogation techniques were immoral? I'm not asking, do you believe they were legal? I'm asking, do you believe they were immoral?
Senator, I believe that CIA did extraordinary work to prevent another attack on this country, given the legal tools that we were authorized to use.
Please answer yes or no. Do you believe in hindsight that those techniques were immoral?
Senator, what I believe sitting here today is that I support the higher moral standard we have decided to hold ourselves to.
Can you please answer the question?
Senator, I think I've answered the question.
No, you've not. Do you believe the previous techniques, now armed with hindsight, do you believe they were immoral? Yes or no?
Senator, I believe that we should hold ourselves to the moral standard outlined in the Army Field Manual.
Okay, so I understand that you've not answered the question, but I'm going to move on. So I understand that you, from previous answers, are serving as the authority over whether or not CIA information concerning you will be classified or not. Given an obvious appearance of conflict, will you agree to recuse yourself from the responsibility and the authority to make decisions about whether or not that information will be classified or not? Will you agree to recuse yourself of that responsibility and authority? Yes or no?
Senator, I am following the guidelines that exist at CIA, and there is another declassification authority. It's called the IRO. I have not interfered with it.
Do you believe that you have the authority to recuse yourself?
I'll take that for the record. I may have the authority to recuse myself.
Assuming
I'm not a lawyer.
Do.
I'm not sure about that.
Assuming you do, and I believe you do, will you agree to recuse yourself from the responsibility and the authority of making decisions about what CIA information about you and your record will be classified or declassified?
Senator, if I had agreed with the proposals that have come up to because people thought it would be advantageous to me, I think I would have been abdicating my responsibility to follow the rules that everyone at CIA follows.
Okay, and you also in this hearing have a responsibility to answer the questions that are being asked of you. I'm going to ask you a different question. Would you agree that given this appearance of conflict or potential conflict around the classification or declassification of these documents, that would you agree that Director Coates instead should have the responsibility for declassification decisions regarding your background?
Senator, I think one important thing is that this committee plays a unique role to review the classified record, and we have sent over every piece of paper we can lay our hands on about my classified record, all of my evaluations over a 33-year career. And I hope every senator has had the opportunity to look at that classified material.
Indeed, I have.
But there
are... I have another question for you then, because I only have a few minutes left. I only have a few seconds left. The president has asserted that torture works. Do you agree with that statement?
Senator, I don't believe that torture works. I believe that in the CIA's program, and I'm not attributing this to enhanced interrogation techniques, I believe, as many people, directors who have sat in this chair before me, that valuable information was obtained from senior al-Qaeda operatives that allowed us to defend this country and prevent another attack.
Is that a yes?
No, it's not a yes. We got valuable information from debriefing of al-Qaeda detainees, and I don't think it's knowable whether interrogation techniques played a role in that.
Senator Feinstein was kind enough about a year ago to send me a book by Peter Bergen called Manhunt. It's a 10-year history of the search for Osama bin Laden, where, as I was thumbing through it recently, I was reminded that post-9/11, President Bush was concerned about reports that he had received that Osama bin Laden and al-Qaeda was meeting with Pakistani officials connected with their nuclear program to gain access to a nuclear device that they might then use for a follow-on attack against cities like Washington, D.C. Without divulging classified information, can you confirm that there were concerns about follow-on attacks using nuclear devices, biological weapons, other weapons of mass destruction that might have killed more innocent Americans, as happened on 9/11? Was that the environment in which you and the country were operating in at the time?
Senator, there were very grave concerns on that front, and indeed, al-Qaeda had those kinds of programs, efforts to acquire crude, dirty bombs, efforts to develop. They had a program, a biological weapons program. I remember the operative who was in charge of that. There was very deep concern about potential contacts, and we continue to monitor this very closely today, between extremists and Pakistani nuclear scientists.
Recently, I had a chance to travel to a garden spot with the chairman and visit with some of those unnamed patriots.
Thank you for doing that.
In the CIA. And I was struck by talking to one gentleman. He was talking about his girlfriend that he no longer had. And I said,
it's a common story.
I said, this must be incredibly difficult on marriages and on relationships and on families. Would you just take just a second to comment about the sacrifices that intelligence officers, rank and file employees of the CIA make when it comes to those sorts of relationships? And
Senator, thank you. You know, maybe I could start by saying I talked about how CIA's boots were the first on the ground in Afghanistan. We suffered the first U.S. casualty. But maybe it's important for the American people to know that CIA officers are still out there in Afghanistan. Our officers are out there fighting extremist al-Qaeda and the Taliban. We have 125 stars on our memorial wall now. Many of those, it's shocking how many stars we've added. I believe we added 7 stars to our wall last year. Perhaps I could cite one personal example of an officer who worked for me. She was the most extraordinary woman. She was our number one al-Qaeda expert. I worked with her in the counterterrorism center. She was having our third baby in those days following 9/11, but we needed her because she had such deep expertise. She later worked for me on terrorism issues in a foreign capital, and then she went to Afghanistan, and she and 6 colleagues were murdered by a suicide bomber who penetrated our base. These are very real sacrifices. These are my friends and colleagues. All of us at CIA have a commitment and an honor-bound obligation to uphold the memory of those officers, mothers who've left their children to go to the field and sometimes have given in their all in service of this country.
I thank Senator Cornyn and Senator Reid.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ms. Haspel. you've been working with the administration now 15 months. You've had the opportunity to brief the president. Have you ever been alone with the president?
Senator, I'm usually there with Senator Coates, a brilliant analyst who delivers the actual analytic briefing, and usually the national security advisor, the vice president.
There have been allegations, Mr. Comey, one, that while he was alone, the president asked for a personal pledge of loyalty. If you were ever approached by the president and asked for a personal pledge of loyalty, what would you respond?
Senator, my only loyalty is to the American people and the Constitution of the United States. I am honored-bound and will work very hard to deliver to this president and his administration the best performance and intelligence CIA can deliver.
And if you were approached in such a way and such a demand was made of you, would you inform this committee and the Congress that you had been so approached?
Senator, I've worked very closely with this president. I don't believe that such a circumstance would ever occur. CIA has been treated with enormous respect, and our expertise is valued for what we bring to the table.
If it occurred, would you inform the committee?
Senator, it's a hypothetical. I don't think it's going to occur. I'm very confident about that.
It does not seem to be a hypothetical. People have alleged that that has happened already.
Senator, I don't know anything about that conversation.
Okay. Now, Senator Harris was asking you about the morality of the enhanced interrogation techniques, the waterboarding. At the time that you were involved in it, in fact, fairly directly, you expressed no moral concerns. In fact, you have suggested that it was good tradecraft. And that it contributed to information that was developed. If one of your operators were captured, subjected to waterboarding and enhanced interrogation techniques, which you, I believe, supervise, would you consider that to be moral, since perhaps the other entity did not have legal restrictions, and good tradecraft, as you appeared to do when you were involved in it previously?
Senator, I don't believe the terrorists follow any guidelines or civilized norms or the law. CIA follows the law.
Excuse me, madam. You seem to be saying that you were not following civilized norms and the law or anything else when you were conducting those self-same activities, if that's the analogy you're going to draw.
Senator, I'm sorry. Can you read? I can't.
Very simple. You have an operations officer who is captured. He's being waterboarded. I've asked you very simply, would you determine that to be immoral and something that should never be done, condoned in any way, shape, or form? Your response seems to be that civilized nations don't do it, but uncivilized nations do it, or uncivilized groups do it.
The United States does it to
civilized nation. A civilized nation was doing it until it was outlawed by this Congress.
Senator, I would never obviously support inhumane treatment of any CIA officers. We've lost CIA officers over the years to terrorists. I just gave an example. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed personally killed a Wall Street Journal correspondent and filmed that. I don't think there's any comparison between CIA officers serving their country, adhering to U.S. law, and terrorists who, by their very definition, are not following anybody's law.
Finally, in the Morrell report, in which you've somewhat acknowledged, there was opposition to the destruction of the tapes by two White House counsels, the counsel of the Vice President, the DNI, the DCIA, and a member of the Congress. And yet, those tapes were destroyed. Do you consider that to be insubordinate actions without the Director, in this case, Mr. Goss, being notified?
Senator, I think that consultation with the director was essential, and a lesson coming out of that is the importance of making sure all the stakeholders have agreed to include congressional oversight. There's also a leadership lesson. Don't let real security issues go unaddressed.
So the action was insubordinate, and you would not countenance anyone in your organization doing something like that?
I expect my officers to bring those difficult issues to me, and I think I have a reputation for not just leaving them in the inbox. I will say this, Mr. Rodriguez has taken full accountability for his decision, which he thought he was operating under his own authority.
Thank you.
Senator's time's expired. We've come to the conclusion of the open session, and I do want to take the opportunity, Ms. Haspel, since two individuals have been mentioned, and they will be the subject of conversation in the closed session, but for the American people's purpose, would you share for them who Khalid Sheikh Mohammed is and Nasiri?
Chairman, thank you. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed was the architect and mastermind of the 9/11 attacks. His nephew, Ramzi Youssef, was behind the 93 attack on the World Trade Center, and Khalid Sheikh Mohammed financed that operation. He also was behind the infamous Bojinka plot in the Philippines. Tragically, he was the individual who personally killed a Wall Street Journal American correspondent and filmed that heinous act. He also, after 9/11, carried out an attack on a synagogue in Tunisia, and he had other attacks planned. We were able to warn allies about a planned attack, for example, on Heathrow Airport. Mr. Nasiri was the emir of the attack in 2000 on the USS Cole, in which we lost 17 sailors. He also was behind the attack on a French ship, the Limburg, and he was the Al-Qaeda chief of operations in the Gulf and the Arabian Peninsula.
This has been a special edition of the Lawfare Podcast. Because it's a special edition of the Lawfare Podcast, there is no music. If there would be, it would be recorded by Sophia Yan. We are, of course, produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. And, of course, you should go tweet the Lawfare Podcast, share the Lawfare Podcast on Facebook, and by all means, review and rate the Lawfare Podcast on whatever podcast distribution service you use. And as always, thanks for listening.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.